Happy Tuesday.
My name's Nick.
And my name is Alan.
And welcome
into the dungeon.
This week, we're now at the true end of season one of Into the Dungeon. This is our review episode of sorts. We're going to talk about our experience in running the game, playing the game, and, you know, what tweaks we had to make it work, not just as a duet, but, spoiler alert, as an adventure itself. So as we set out in episode zero, and as we alluded to last week, this is the format that our campaigns will take. We play through the adventure, we then reflect on our favorite moments and memories of the adventure that we've played, and then we'll review it of sorts. So, you know, we're going to talk about the preparation process to run the game, any adaptions we've had to make to it, our thoughts and feelings on the adventure itself, you know, from both the perspective of the DM and the player, and ultimately to what extent we would recommend running this adventure yourself. So straight off the bat, this is a mistake that I think I made personally, and I know that some of our friends made as well, when they were D&D fledglings, D&D virgins, if you will, and they decided to run a game themselves with nobody having any experience. The way the game is packaged, and I know it says, before people start jumping on the comments and telling me off, it says essentials kit and there's a starters kit, but the way it's packaged, it's very easy to make a mistake and assume it is a beginner set. It most certainly is not. I mean, it does provide you, you know, with the basic rules, with all those item cards, with a set of dice, a DM screen, maps, and an adventure.
One would say the essentials.
Yes, one would say the essentials, but it is so easy to think that that is literally all you need. It's not clear that you need experience and a lot of work to run this adventure. So, you know, picking up on that, some things that you would think would be essential and are not included, and that is part of the issue, is, you know, there's things like no links or no information with Neverwinter, Tribor, Leylon, etc. And those of you who followed the campaign on our podcast will know that at times, Shrew and his shrubberies had to travel great distances in search of items and weapons and lore and information. I mean, it's a shorter trip to just hop over to Leylon. No information provided on that. Big Al returns to Tribor, which in fact is a hell of a lot closer to his ranch than Phandalin was, so begs the question, why didn't the survivor head over to Tribor, where he was well known, and not, you know, gallivant all down the Tribor trail almost to the Sword Coast in search of assistance in Phandalin?
Because he was drunk and he got lost.
Clearly. But, you know, as a player, you could have said, oh, I want to go to Tribor, maybe they've got some new weapons there, or maybe there's somebody who doesn't have a monopoly on potions because Adabra's a bitch and she keeps giving me this discount, which perhaps isn't even really a discount, and that's the real price, but there's nowhere else to go to.
Is that true, though?
No, she did be. That wasn't the adventure. That was one of the tweaks I had to make to sort of make the adventure a bit more playable. But there's no information provided there, and, you know, Leylon, in those adventures beyond the Dragon of Iceberg Peak that we've got access to on D&D Beyond, is more fleshed out. So yeah, there's issues with the lack of information provided. You know, things like, as I mentioned in the reflection episode, where Harley is a agent of Zentrim, doesn't give you any more information on who they are or what they're doing. A Harbin Wested sort of implies that he's there as a town mayor, but, you know, the town comes under the protectorship of Neverwinter, but no information is given on Neverwinter, even though it's arguably a shorter trek than going all the way through the woods. You know, you could have hopped on a cart and been there in no time following the road. So there's a lot of stuff that's not really there for you to take off the bat, and if you're playing a sandbox style game, it's things you need to be ready for and, you know, have information at hand or prepared in advance.
If I can interject here, part of the confusion I think is because this is packaged as a sandbox experience, right? Where you pick up quests and you can move around. And at the end of the day, one of the big selling things to non-D&D or TTRPG players is when you tell them, you can do anything you want. So imagine being a fledgling DM with very little to no experience, and then the players that also have very little experience and have decided to start playing this campaign say, well, as you said, I want to go to Neverwinter. I want to see if they have any weapons there. Now what? What does the DM do? Because in the Essentials kit, there's no mention of Neverwinter. And I understand you can't have everything, but I don't know. I feel like it's what you're saying. It's a bit confusing, especially to new players, maybe. It's not really apparent that this is for more experienced DMs.
Yeah, fully agreed there. You know, and before people say, like, well, you wouldn't go to Neverwinter when there's a dragon gallivanting around the area. Well, why would you go 3 days' march across to Tribal Trail to save a farmer who has no impact whatsoever on the story? Why would you go to the Logger's Camp to take supplies to Harbin West's brother? There's this almost catastrophic event going on where dragons moved into the area. So if you've got time to do all these gopher quests, which I had a big issue with at the beginning and I sort of had to tweak and help them make more sense, why wouldn't you go to Neverwinter? You'd think, well, hang on a minute, there's nothing in this dump of a town. Let's go stack up on some items and equipment, maybe even try and get some new allies, etc. So it didn't really make sense to me. And sort of talking about those quests themselves as well, you know, I had to edit them a bit to at least give Shrew as a player some sort of link to the overall story, or at least make it feel part of the world. And I think I got better as the campaign went on by sort of tweaking them. But as an example, the quest for Butterskull Ranch, that just ended up being a poster on in the town. The whole, you know, a survivor strolling into town seeking assistance that isn't in the adventure itself, had to sort of tweak that, because otherwise why would the character go there? You know, the player would go there because metagaming, you'd think, well, I need to level up and fight a dragon, so I'll do this quest because there's work on the job board. But it wasn't really linked to the adventure itself. A big one that we've spoken about on our bonus episodes and Into the Studio as well in passing before is, you know, like three quarters of the way through the campaign, Harbin Wester, as written, suddenly decides to remember that, you know, there's a legend and lore of this ancient dragon slayer that killed the last dragon in the area, conveniently buried not too far away from Phandalin, and has a dragon slaying sword. And it's like, well, why would that come up now and from Harbin? So we use Dazzle and Norbus, which I'll talk a bit more about. They are archaeologists. I thought, well, they'll have more information on this sort of a thing, which can be organically worked into the story and give them a bit more purpose. And a lot of the quests, you know, particularly at the beginning, the Shrine of Savaras, you wouldn't have discovered until far later. But if you're already in the area, you know, looking for Big Al, it would have been annoying to backtrack 3 days back in that direction after having been there already. And then only to be told that, the dragon is at the top of Icespire Peak. You don't say.
Because I thought it was the dragon of Icespire Plains. Obviously, it's on the peak. It's the Dragon of Icespire Peak.
Yeah, so clearly it was going to be up there. So, I mean, we had to, or rather I had to sort of add a bit more into that. And I think it was a big opportunity missed from a storytelling point of view as well, because you can go the entire campaign and not even know that there's an orc threat going on. So I decided to use that vision to show that not only was a dragon up at Icespire Hold or in Icespire Peak, but there was also other things going on, that a thunderbolt was going to try to be summoned, that there were orc hordes that could potentially lay waste to Phandalin. So yeah, I think a lot of the quests were, especially the early ones, they kind of made the player feel a bit like a gopher, which was alluded to in some of your roleplay interactions as well.
Yeah, I don't want to get in the way of your review too much, but I think, just to give more context to all of this, I think that's what made Shrew dislike Harbing and end up having a bit of a rift with Phandalin. It felt like all of Phandalin, whilst this cataclysmic event was going on and we all had to band together to get rid of this dragon, they were all interested in their own commerce or their own ideals or their own things. Like, there was no interest in helping this person that had come to defeat a dragon, as opposed to Nomengard, for example, that they were willing to help and willing to give Shrew items in return for help, but still help Shru further his mission to kill the dragon. So I think that kind of tips a player to the side of not liking Wester too much and not liking Phandalin too much, which might be the intention here. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think you're meant to like Harbin much. He is described as a pompous character. And that's another issue, I think, with not just this official adventure, but certainly other ones that I've read and played through as well. They don't really give you much to help color the NPCs you run, which in a way is good because it means everybody will play them slightly differently. But a little bit more information or background information on their motives and that would help. And sort of sticking with, you know, I was talking about before, Phandalin coming on the Neverwinter. It poses the question from a narrative point of view, whereas, you know, if they come under Neverwinter, why were there no guards, no mercenaries sent to help? I tried to tweak this a bit in the story by having had Harbin Wester requesting aid, which was sent by Neverwinter, those guards that you met. And it was also used as a way to showcase the power of the dragon as well. And, you know, sticking with good old Harbin, it's not just Harbin Wester, but, you know, Harbin, Falcon, Big Al, to a lesser extent, or rather for different reasons, Sister Garel and Dazzin and Orbis, but certainly Harbin, Falcon and Big Al. They're really rigid characters the way they're written, you know, words to the effect like Harbin refuses to leave his door, so his room, so doesn't matter what you do, he's not going to leave. Falcon never leaves the lodge, even though he's this epic fighter and clearly at the beginning of the campaign arguably stronger than the player characters anyway, doesn't leave his lodge to go and help you in the mansion. Big Al, after you rescue him, who's also a veteran and the same as Falcon, probably stronger than the players are at that point, won't leave the farm and help you look for his cow, even though he really wants his cow. So we had to sort of tweak all those things, you know, as the relationship grew between Harbin and Shru. He was more open, and I think it helps build the story and the character and the roleplay elements a bit more there.
I tell you what, that just feels like lazy writing, and I'm sorry, I don't even know who wrote this, so I'm sorry. But it's like, we've got these characters, but we really don't want to flesh them out, and we don't really want to get into the whole thing of go and get my cow, but I'm an epic fighter, but I don't want to help, and go to the manse, but I don't really want to go with you. There's no reason why they wouldn't, like at least no good reason given, I believe, as why they wouldn't. And it feels like that. We don't want to expand the story too much. We don't want to expand these characters too much. So let's just say that they refuse.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me. And I know, you know, Bardock runs for our in-person campaign with our friends and family, that he's had similar comments as he's running the Curse of Strahd as well, where perhaps characters that are recurring in the adventure, and they have like not even a full line of description or their characters, or their feelings, their not much guidance as to how to use them, or they don't really have a big impact in the way that the story is written. They just happen to be there, which, as I said before, can work well in some ways as well, because it means that everybody can flesh them out in a different way. But in this box set, because it comes in that neat package, which is very easy to mistake as a beginner's kit, or as an essentials kit as it's called, is it really essential if it doesn't provide you with all the information you need to just pick up and play? Quite a bit of work to do there. Sticking with the characters, you know, I mentioned before, Dazzle and Norbus, for me, massively underused. They just come out in that one scene where you go and basically tell them that there's a dragon around, which, no shit, Sherlock. You know, the whole town seems to know there's a dragon, to the point where the town master has put flyers asking for help. These guys happen to be in the mountain. Surely, at some point, if they've been digging there for over a month, they've seen the damn dragon flying around.
And it was Harbin that asked me to tell them, right?
Yeah.
What does Norbus and Dazzling have to do with Harbin anyway? Why would Harbin want me to tell them there's a dragon around? Why?
They had no link to Harbin at all. They had no real link to Phandalin at all.
Why would he care? Who, like, now we're going to suddenly go around the whole of the Sword Coast telling people there's a dragon? Like, why Norbus and Dazzling?
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
I mean, I can understand to a point, and I forgot to mention her there as well, because Adabra doesn't really do much either as written. She didn't become, or rather, she's not written as the character she became in our story, and perhaps not as the character will become in your story, as I keep saying. Perhaps it is a good thing, depending on how you look at it, because it means everybody will play them differently. But at least with Adabra, it made sense, because if she's the only potion maker in town, shit's about to go down, and...
Yeah, you want her alive.
You need her alive.
Yeah. And they were friends, I don't know if you made that up.
No, I think I made that up as well.
All right, cool.
There's not much about relationships and links between...
But I get what you're saying. Like, if you leave a blank canvas, it allows DMs to kind of put the flavor, like you've done, into the game. But it would help...
As an essentials kit. Yeah,
and it would help if there's something to go on off, something to go off from. Like, at least say they know each other from past adventures or whatever, their family or something, so that you can then create the story around it. Give some inspiration to the DMs trying to run this, because there's a lot of work to do to add all of that on top of them as well.
Yeah, 100%. And as I said before, Dazzle and Orbis, massively underused for me. They should have been used as written, as the ones that give you information for the quest of the Dragon Burrow. They could have given you the information on the Circle of Thunder, which they did. They could have also been used to give you information on Icebar Hold, the Legend of Axholm. Again, the Legend of Axholm, there was nothing other than that a banshee, that this elf had died there as a prisoner. So I had to research all the lore from other stories and other campaigns where it's sort of mentioned in passing and flesh out that whole lore. But those quests, to me, made more sense to come from Dazzle and Orbis rather than Harbin sticking up a poster in the town hall. It felt very disjointed to me. And I think that's been quite a consistent comment that I've seen in other people's reviews of this adventure. That even though it's a sandbox experience, the quests themselves are quite disjointed in relation to the story. Sticking with, the story as written, or the adventure rather as written, you mentioned before, almost comes across a bit as lazy writing. I wish it just started and ended with the quests themselves. But there's even inconsistencies with the D&D lore, which, as the dragon of Icespy Peak, you would expect that they would get that right, at least, unless I've completely misunderstood other adventures. But in the Storm King's Thunder, there's an adult white dragon called Cryovane, exactly the same as the one in the Dragon of Icespy Peak, who flees from the north, the same as the Dragon of Icebar Peak who happens to come down from the north. And yet in the Dragon of Icebar Peak, it's a young dragon, even though the adventure is set later in the timeline of Faerun than the other one. So it was like, if it's not meant to be the same dragon, give it a different name, change up the backstory a bit. The way it reads when you look at both of them, it seems evident, at least to me and to others when I was preparing the campaign, that it's the same dragon, so why not just make it an adult dragon and add that extra level or two to the milestone system that the adventure uses? And sticking still, and I don't want this to come across as if I'm badgering the adventure too much itself, because ultimately I've really enjoyed playing it. I think my main issue with it is that it A, looks like a beginner set, and B, even if you ignore the fact that it looks like a beginner set and it's an essentials kit, I still think there's a lot of work to put in to be able to run this. But for me, one of the really, really big issues with the campaign, which almost to an extent could even be game-breaking for me, is that there's no mechanism in place through way of story or way of resources available to the player for a cure of lycanthropy.
Yeah, that, as we saw in our campaign, becomes a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it ended up adding, 40 plus episodes to...
Yeah, half of it was due to being bitten by a were-rat.
So, imagine you're playing this campaign, you go to Mountain Toes Mine, you get bitten by a were-rat, and the adventure book literally says that Sister Gorel, who would be a cleric, no stats given for her, no character sheet, nothing other than she's a young elf cleric of Timora, and it just says she is away from Phandalin for the duration of the adventure. So it doesn't matter if in game world it takes 2 days to do the Dragon of Icebar Peak, or if it takes 6 months in game time whilst you're gallivanting around that, she will never be there. And that to me seemed like really lazy writing and game breaking to an extent. So you're cursed with lycanthropy, you don't want to be a were-rat, now what? You're screwed. Oh wait, I'll go to Neverwinter and see if there's somebody there. You're not in luck, because there's no information on Neverwinter for the DM to prepare there either.
Why is Sister Gorel even mentioned if she's never going to appear?
It's a good question. One we should pose to the writers. Literally no information is given. But you know, when I looked at that and I saw that, for me, that massive flaw, I was like, well, what happens if Shrew or one of the shrubberies fails the saving throws and they get cursed with lycanthropy? It seems a bit, I don't want to say cheap, but perhaps that is the right words. Like, you've been forced into a situation, now there's nothing realistically you can do about it. So what I did, because in the same way that for me Sister Gorel was poorly used, the same as, you know, Dazzle and Norbus, Harlia for me was massively underused as well. So what I did was I sort of linked the two together, and I thought, well, if Sister Gorel is the cleric of Phandalin, surely word has already got to Neverwinter that there's a dragon Phandalin. As a good cleric, you would imagine she'd want to return to her flock and try to assist in any way. So I merged those three stories together, so Sister Gorel, Harlia, and the Tower of Storms, because the Tower of Storms isn't an official quest per se, it's a rumor you hear in passing in the tavern, depending on the roles you take.
To what end? Why would you hear that rumor? Isn't the quest kind of written in the adventure?
It's written in, but you can miss it entirely, depending on,
right,
on what comes up.
I see.
Because it's linked to the orc side story, which, as I said before, you could have very easily completely missed it. So I thought, well, you know, Sister Gorel would have wanted to go back and help her town. I'll link that up with the Tower of Storms and say that the ship that was bringing her down, which would have been safer than, you know, the roads with all these monsters that have been displaced, will have been brought down by Moesco. Moesco will have her imprisoned, depending on how long the players take to get there. They may be able to rescue her there, or it's a nice link into the Circle of Thunder, and for the players to discover that arc as she's taken away to be sacrificed. And the way I did it was because of these shady items, or items that could appear shady, that were found on the shipwreck. I thought those would be perfect for an agent of Zentrim. So I tied that in with Harlia and the limited information that was provided there. So to give the player a bit more reason to want to explore those. So had you not been bitten by the were-rats, you may never have had to go to the Tower of Storms and all that, but because you did, now you had even more reason, because it's like, oh shit, the only person that couldn't cure me in this area just so happens to be rumored to have been brought down in a ship there. So a bit of work, I think, to sort of tie in those unlinked quests to the main story. For me, preparing as well for the sessions we've played, there could have been some better maps, I think, better battle maps. I had to tweak some of them. A lot of them seemed quite poorly designed. The Dragon Burrow comes to mind, where when you enter the tomb itself through one of the, I think it was one of the spines you toppled over, the secret entrance, you could literally bypass the entire tomb and just get the sword. I had an issue with that as well, because there was no warning. No, it seemed very unfair that, you know, you finally get to the sword, you pick it up, and then you're attacked by an invisible stalker. Pretty much what happened, but I had written in like some sort of riddle which would allude that something could happen, and then I fleshed it out with some more tombs, and I used that as an opportunity to put some Easter eggs of previous characters we've played in there. But you know, some of the maps had lots of filler, lots of empty rooms, and it just seemed like a bit of a slog to go through. So I think Mountain Toes Mine was one of them, where I just removed entire rooms entirely because they just didn't really fit with the story. Axe Home, similar. It's up to each person. Some people like the tension of, you know, dungeon crawling, but if there's nothing in the rooms, no bad guys, no treasure, no loot, no secrets, why have it?
Also, I feel especially important, seeing as we are recording this for an audience as a podcast, but you don't want to spend 20 minutes exploring rooms that at the end of the day don't further the story or have nothing to offer. Perhaps in a private campaign, you can take the liberty of going through all those rooms, empty rooms, and have fun doing so, as you said, the tension. But as a podcast, I don't think it plays well.
Yeah, certainly not for a podcast. But I think if I put myself as the player as well, and you've been waiting weeks, inevitably, to get everybody's diaries lined up so you can finally play D&D, I would be a little disappointed if half the session was just, you know, roll it, I want to investigate. You roll high, you're excited. Ooh, what am I going to find? Nothing. Next room, nothing. Next room, nothing. And then you suddenly realize you've been playing for an hour and literally nothing's happened.
Yeah, that, yeah, regardless of podcast, that doesn't sound fun.
You know what else wasn't fun?
What?
The anchorites.
Really?
They literally just had the stats of a orc. I think maybe a couple of hit points more. Nothing special about them other than they could just turn into a boar. So thankfully when I was preparing, it was like, well, you know, Moesco was built up and hyped to be almost like a boss. These anchorites had convinced the orcs to fight with them. And they were really bland, really uninspiring. And thankfully on Reddit, I found a really useful post by Oh Hi Mark. And he linked a more interesting template for the anchorites, which gave them different powers. You know, those tusks that you found that did shock damage as well.
Yeah.
And I sort of got that and then I built on it a little bit. I used Mark's template that he very kindly provided on the subreddit. And I used a website which I have regularly visited to make NPCs and, you know, foes for you to fight, be it in this campaign or be it in other campaigns that we've run, which is on rpgtinker.com, one of the great resources I've used in this campaign. And you can create, you know, all kinds of NPCs. So I use that as a template to build a druid character, which I suppose for licensing reasons they don't use the same name. So a druid is a warden, a rogue is a scoundrel, I think it is, a paladin is a holy warrior, yeah, etc. You can more or less guess from the description. You choose the array, you choose the level, and it creates a character for you with a name, the prepared spells, spell slots, any perks or abilities depending on the NPC's race, etc. So I had to use those to sort of create a feeling that the anchorites were more powerful than the orcs. And, you know, imagine getting to the Circle of Thunder or as you fought with Moesk on that roof and it's just a normal orc with tusks on his hands. It would have, to me, it seemed a bit anticlimactic. Not sure how you would have felt after finally getting to the Circle of Thunder and just coming across a couple of orcs.
Well, I know who I have to thank for almost dying various times to the hand of the anchorites, that high mark guy that you found on Reddit. But yeah, it would have been a big battle built up, a turning moment with the Thunderbolt Warfuck, and then the minions would have been easy to kill. Nah, wouldn't have been good storytelling, I don't think. Wouldn't have been something memorable that I would have played, I think.
I've just got two more gripes of the story, which really grinded my gears as well. And that was, you know, the sidekicks. I really appreciate the idea behind it. I think we were talking about this couple of days ago when we were recording the epilogue, and you mentioned that there'd been a refreshed version in, I think it's Tasha's Cauldron. But you know, as they're written in this adventure, honestly, they're pretty useless after second level, third level. You know, if you're getting dealt 20 damage in a hit and all that your NPC sidekick can heal is a 1d4 or 1d6 or whatever it was, the spell that they had, it gets to the point where they're just in the way more than anything. They're not really helping in a duet, particularly if you make the tweaks that I felt that we had to make the story more engaging. Perhaps one could argue that I went too far and made Fenner a little OP'd with that, was it Guiding Bolt?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's something that you're forced to do, tweak around and play around with the mechanics of the sidekicks, because as you said, it seems like it's something that was unfinished. And testament to that is the fact that they have gone and refleshed it in further books.
Yeah, my recommendation, if you're running this, because obviously I understand that when you're the sole player and you've got to run these extra NPCs, it's a lot of work to expect the player to run three full character sheets. A lot of stuff to stay on top of, a lot of spells, a lot of items, a lot of action management, etc. But I would really recommend you use rpgtinker.com. and create your companions there. It gives you all the prepared spells. You can level them up later on by just regenerating that character and adding an extra hit die. And it will add extra spells, so it can be randomly generated for you. You don't need to just stick with those very limiting options that were there. And it brings me on to my final gripe with the adventures written, which is the dragon roll table. I honestly didn't understand the point of it. And then I don't think it worked properly in line with their own rules.
Explain to those that don't really know what the dragon roll table is.
So basically every time you arrive at a location, as a DM, I would have been rolling on this table. And depending on the result, would be where the dragon is. There's a couple of issues with that. One, you know, if you start the adventure, as we know from the anecdotes of our friends who tried playing this thinking it was a beginner's kit, they rolled and the dragon just happened to appear right there in front of them. It's like, oh shit, here we are, the dragon's here. And not in a thematic storytelling way like we did in our campaign, where it was just there to show the power. There could have been a very slight chance that, you know, depending on your actions, maybe it would have attacked you, maybe it wouldn't. But here it would have been like, well, the dragon's here, it's laying waste to Phandalin just as you happen to walk in day one. Perhaps if you did it in preparation so that you're not caught off guard and unprepared, because again, it looks like a beginner's kit. So imagine you start playing, you roll the dice because you're blindly following what's written in the book, and you go, oh shit, the dragon's just appeared. Get the dragon stats, prepare it, how are you going to roleplay the dragon, how are you going to, you know, what are the rules for it, and all that stuff. So I can understand, as you are preparing one session to another, and you know, for example, I would have thought, okay, so Shrew is going to Nomengard, I'm going to roll in my preparation like we did for the backstory episodes, that I roll, okay, so when Shrew is here, the dragon will be there, oh shit, the dragon's actually going to be there, but now I've got time to prepare for that. It's not spur of the moment. I know some people maybe like the complete spontaneity and that randomness, but I think with such an important character and the namesake of the adventure, to me it cheapens it a little bit. And then the other issue with that was the distances just don't make sense, because, you know, if we play it as it's written in the book, so you arrive at Adabra's windmill, I roll, the dragon is in the loggers' camp, you now return to Phandalin, I roll, the dragon is now in Nomengard. You know, in the 2 hours it takes for you to walk from Adabras to Phandalin, the dragon physically cannot fly from the loggers' camp all the way over to Nomengard. So, you know, you'd have to calculate all those things. Does it make sense? Does it not make sense? And this is a good place to put in a little plug for another handy tool I've been using quite extensively in this campaign. And that is an interactive map of the Sword Coast, which is absolutely amazing. In fact, it's not even just the Sword Coast. I think it's a large chunk of Faerun, or at least the Forgotten Realms. You can find that on www.aide, that's A-I-D-E, followed by a dd.org, so aidedd.org/atlas, or just write interactive map of the Sword Coast on Google or Bing or whatever search engine you use. It'll come up. It's amazing. You can see all the different locations across the world. It's got little markers that you can click on, and it'll give you information on that area. But then on the right, if you click the hamburger menu, it opens up these options, and one of them is show distance and time. So you can click from one point to another, either as the crow flies, or you can, as I did when I knew the path Shrew was taking, I would click and try and follow the road and then follow the forest, and it would automatically calculate for you and say, okay, the forest is difficult terrain, so it takes it into account in the travel time, and it would give you the travel time on foot, quick march, horse and cart, griffin or dragon, sailboat, etc. So really handy tool as a DM if you're preparing any session or any adventure and you want to know accurate times and distances for you to plan your adventures in.
You know what the mechanic of the dragon roll table sounds like to me? And maybe, well, maybe not, I'm making this up, but I would have to investigate. For me, it feels like the design of this game had been playing Skyrim and enjoyed the way that suddenly you're walking down somewhere and at random chance a dragon appears and attacks you.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel that he might have been playing that game and he felt, this could be a cool mechanic for my TTRPG. Let's just throw it in there without much regard to anything else. Just a cool, he might appear.
Yeah, I mean, the tension, especially if you tell your players the dragon might appear anywhere at any time, I can understand the thrill maybe that brings, but
I mean, if it were like minions of the dragon or dragonlings and things that go appearing, and perhaps as you go leveling, they go leveling too, and the more appear, and it gets progressively harder. But to have the main character, the main point of the game, appear to you on game day one, I mean, what do you do? You kill the dragon as a level one? What are you supposed to do? And if you do kill the dragon as a level one, well, that's it. You've finished the game. Congratulations. You killed the dragon of Icepire Peak, but you've experienced none of the campaign. So, yeah.
Worse, you get killed in episode one and now roll a new character.
Like, why? Why even put the DM in that situation? And of course, it's all about role-playing and it's all about making a story up. So you could say that the dragon attacks and then pulls away. But is that implied in the rules? Or at least is that implied in how the story is written? Or is it the dragon fights till the death? Like the white dragon, as far as I know, fights till the death.
Yeah, that's what a white dragon does.
So what do you do then? Yeah, it's a bit, as I say, it seems like, yeah, this would be cool. This would be cool. Let's put that in there. But there hasn't been, like, it's not coherent.
Yeah, I think that sums it up quite nicely, particularly for me. Things didn't seem to work nicely together as cogs of a bigger picture. Almost feels like that sort of meme where there's no bad ideas and everybody's just throwing the things in there. But yeah, I've mentioned a couple of interesting tools you can use, you know, that interactive map and the link from Oh Hi Mark, which helps as well, and RPG Tinker. Some other really great tools we've used to help with the campaign, which not unique to this campaign, you can use it in any of them. D&D Beyond goes without saying, I've been using that now, not only to run the adventure because we have it on there, but also to check, you know, monster stats and the initiative trackers and that. Kobold Fight Club, great help as well if you have to plan and prepare an encounter for your players. Forgotten Realms Wiki, in part due to the fault of this adventure and the lack of information and inconsistent lore. Great website which gives you information on every faction, every town, village, obscure location, pretty much everything's there. Then we also have the Fantasy Name Generator, which helps to flesh out the world a little bit and, you know, all those extra NPCs that, of course, I don't expect an adventure to throw in there for you. So, you know, if Shrew wants to look around in this campaign and speak with somebody and you're stuck and you can't think of a name, head on over to fantasynamegenerator.com. Great tool. So anyway, back to the actual campaign. It sounds like I didn't enjoy it, but that would be incorrect. I really did enjoy the overall story. It felt like a classic fantasy tale where you've got a town on the edge of like the savage frontier, which is being rebuilt and people are trying to scrape together a living. And then, you know, just when you think things are going well and things are looking better, a new threat comes. And what better threat than a dragon? It doesn't get more classic than that. Had a bit of everything and had a bit of, you know, fetching quests and quests where you fight different monsters, even though you could very easily miss much of it, as I've highlighted the fact that you get to fight orcs, which again are a classic fantasy trope, and they're trying to summon this almost deity, this thunderbore, and there's things happening all around. So as long as you are aware of it going in and you're prepared to put in some work as an adventure, I enjoyed the setting. I enjoyed the fact that it's a dragon, that there's a hold, that there's a castle, that there's a dragon burrow, that there's an ancient sword that you've got to go find, which helps you. All very classic fantasy tropes, so I really did enjoy those bits. I know I've been very critical of it up till this point, and as the DM, there is a lot of work to put in, and I think it could have been done better. But overall, as an experience, I think with some tweaks, it is quite a fun adventure to play.
So it gets the Into the Dungeon seal of approval.
Just about, I think.
And as a duet?
As a duet, certainly a lot of work to put in. Probably the first time they tried doing, at least to my understanding, was when they introduced the companion system. So props to trying that out. As we mentioned before, I think they've tweaked it a bit on Tasha's Cauldron. Definitely room for improvement in how you can use the sidekicks. But yeah, a lot of work, I think, as well to make it work with those sidekicks. They're basically cannon fodder beyond the second or third adventure. What about you as a player? How did you find, you know, knowing the tweaks I've had to make? How do you think you would have, or rather, how do you think it would have changed your experience of the adventure as written? How do we play it? How we intended at the beginning, where we just pull it out of the box and play as written? Do you think that as a player, you'd have preferred it that way? Or do you think hearing now the tweaks we had to make, do you think it's the right sort of thing to do to make it more cohesive?
I mean, for our playstyle, at the end of the day, different people will have different playstyles. Perhaps certain people aren't too keen on world building and role playing. But for our personal playstyle, what you did is a must, I think. I'm sure the campaign would have been fun to play anyway, as you get to kill a dragon and all that. But certain things would have made it a bit of a drag. For example, the dragon appearing in episode 1 and killing you. You know, then obviously people not being tied to the story and all that. And I, as a player that enjoys role-playing, if you try to role-play with a character and you don't get anything back, it becomes a bit demoralizing. So for us, as we play, I think what you did is a must, as I said. And I'm glad you put in the work and made it into not just the Dragon of Aespire Peak, but build a kind of narrative behind it that gelled it all together. As a player, I really enjoyed it as well, the campaign, the whole setting, as you said. Really enjoyable. I do recommend you playing it. But if you're the DM, as Nick said, be aware that there is some tweaking to be made, and know that without an experience, it might be a bit overwhelming. Perhaps start with a one-shot.
Is there such a thing as a one-shot?
That's another argument for another episode and another day.
Agreed. So yeah, I think that ends this review episode. I think I've said everything I wanted to say from the DM's perspective. And, you know, we've given you some tools that you can use. There's just two more that I want to highlight. Perhaps not essential in your preparation for this adventure or any adventure, but it certainly helps. And that's adding some ambience to your game session. We've used Sirenscape, which I've used in the past for campaigns we've run. And it's quite handy because you can make all these different presets and all these different moods, and at the click of a button, it all changes for you. But for the podcast, it didn't really work because, you know, as we talked about in the reflection episode, there's a lot of editing that goes in and a lot of rule checks cutting out. So I can't use the music that we use in person in the actual final edit, because otherwise it'd be a nightmare trying to sync up. You could very clearly tell exactly what had been cut. But if you're playing on yourselves and you're not recording a podcast as we're doing, great tool to play with and add some real ambience to your game nights. We've mentioned it before in various episodes, and I think it's only right to end this maiden campaign full cycle, where we've now done the 84 episodes of adventure, the reflection episode, and now the review episode, to give a big shout out and a big thanks to tabletopaudio.com. They've got, I think it's a couple of hundred now, different soundscapes. You've probably heard just about all the fantasy and historical and nature and horror ones on this show at some point or another. I've used many of their tracks to create those soundscapes in our episodes. Great quality, great variety. Really recommend them. You can make your playlists and save them. They also have a sound pad now as well, which is kind of what Sirenscape does. But because of the same reasons as I've given for Sirenscape now for the podcast, it didn't really work for us. I would rather just download the tracks, which you can do off their website. They're free to use as long as you're not, you know, using them commercially. Make sure you check their about page and check what their terms and conditions are at the time that you access them, to make sure that you're using them within their license. But they're an amazing website. So many great soundscapes, so easy to use. Really grateful for the great work that they've put out there. We've certainly made good use of them.
And we shall continue to do so.
So I think that brings this episode naturally to an end. Just to summarize, I think it's a nice setting. Some classic fantasy tropes, which are always fun to play with. Don't forget, it's not a beginner set. Don't make the mistake that I did and some of our friends did. And even though it is an essentials kit, I think most people will want to put at least a little bit of work. Maybe you don't have to do as much as we did. Everybody doesn't play in the same way. There's no right or wrong way to play D&D. You play it the way that you want to and what's right for your table and your friends. But I would recommend a little bit of work, just to certainly to make the story feel a bit more cohesive. But yeah, I hope you've enjoyed the Dragon of Aespire Peak. Seems like quite a momentous occasion now. This is truly the end of season one. Have we announced officially yet what we're playing next on the podcast beyond our bonus episodes?
I think we have, but as a reminder, our next campaign will be Joe Dever's Lone Wolf. It's a kind of choose your own adventure book where you read along and you are presented with different decisions you have to make, which lead to different pages. So you go choosing and go progressing through the adventure.
There's also a game element to it though as well, isn't there? With dice rolls, well, not dice rolls, but random number generators and inventory management and all that.
Yes, there's fights, there's items you'll have and items you'll need to find on the way. It's a series of books. We'll be probably playing book 1 to 5, if we can. It's called the Kai series, the first book being Flight from the Dark. It's meant to be played by a single player, But here we're going to put it through the test of the duet in Into the Dungeon, see if we can run it as a duet, and if it plays nicely. That's the whole point of this channel. So we'll go more into that in the next episode, episode 0, which will be coming next week, where we'll be creating our characters, talking about what we are setting out to achieve with this, and any tweaks we might have made to how the game plays, because obviously it's meant to be played for one player and it's two of us. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to a new chapter and a new beginning, and having some pressure taken off from all that tweaking that we had to do. We will have to ever so slightly tweak the rules, but we will explain all of that in episode 0. Don't fret though, even though it is a choose your own adventure book / single player hybrid sort of an adventure book, you know us by now, after all these episodes, we're all about the roleplay. There will be role-playing as we, because there's two of us, so if there's a decision presented to us, we'll be role-playing our characters. So we won't know what decision we're going to make, it'll be down to whatever happens on the day. I think it'll be interesting. Certainly I don't think you will have ever heard Lone Wolf or seen Lone Wolf played in that way. And we hope that you enjoy that. And I really hope we last more than an episode as well. Because I don't know if we're going to die or not.
Let's see how it goes.
We'll have to see, yeah. Thank you so much for tuning in, not only to this episode, but to our maiden campaign, The Dragon of Iceberg Peak. We're eternally grateful for the support that you've given us by tuning in and listening in every week and engaging with us either on Discord, Buy Me a Coffee, our website, etc. It's really meant the world to us to see that people from literally all over the world, I think it's 40 plus countries at this point, that have tuned in, and to a greater or lesser extent. We even temporarily had a little segment where we would say hello and welcome into the dungeon in different languages, which was
short-lived.
Too much pressure and too much work.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much for tuning in, for supporting us. And we hope you stick around as we start our new adventure, as we delve
into the dungeon.